right, welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. I am Kyle Meinke, Lions beat writer for MLive. Joined as always by Ben Raven. Ben, it's been a bit of a break since we recorded. How are things?
Much better than they were last Thursday when we stared at each other and I couldn't be heard on your end. And then I watched our proud advanced local support staff remotely fix my computer for a good 5 hours. We're back on board. I've started classes. I'm getting used to homework again. So what better time than 2 weeks out from the NFL draft to throw another massive load on my plate?
I do feel like it's the calm before the storm. You know, there hasn't been that much going on in the last week. You know, there was free agency, and there's a lot to recap there a couple weeks ago. And things have died off, but you know, it's the beast is coming. The storm is coming. The NFL draft is only, 3 weeks away. It's here in Detroit too. I live in the city. You're already seeing road closures. I drove downtown the other day. I drove past Campus Martius. They're building the stage and everything as we speak. It's happening, and there are 300,000 people headed our way.
Unbelievable! I know. I'm going to be moving into Detroit, moving back to Detroit the weekend after the draft. So yeah, I'll be back in that zip code. I can't wait.
Yeah, dude, it'd be nice to have you back in town. A lot's changed since you've been down here. A lot of good eats, dude. I already told my girlfriend though, like, stay away from downtown because it's going to be a mess for the next 3 weeks with the closures and all the people downtown. It's going to be exciting though. I'm selfishly thankful though that we'll be in Allen Park for the draft and don't have to deal with the madness that's going to unfurl there at Campus Martius down to, all the way down to the river. I mean, you're just going to see a mass of people.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. Everybody's asking me, oh, where are you going to be at for the draft downtown? I'm going to be like, I'm going to be posted up eating tacos, watching TV in Allen Park for about 72 straight hours. And I will take that this year over the alternative.
Well, I've already thought they usually give us pizza on day one, and day one, they have the latest pick in franchise history. It's going to be like 11 PM when that thing goes down. If they stay on the pick at 29, there's a chance we're all going to be comatose from like the pizza they bring in at that point. I'm used to like being off the clock by then, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Another whole new world situation. I mean, my gosh, the last 2 years after having two first round picks, I mean, this is almost going to be a welcome experience for draft week. And we'll see how it goes. Brad Holmes is a wheeler and dealer. So nothing set, I'd say.
That is absolutely true. And when you look at someone like, I mean, personally, like, listen, you do this for long enough, you start to develop draft crushes. I got one on Jackson Powers Johnson. Like, I just think he kicks ass as a player. I think off the field, he has everything you're looking for. He comes from the program that produced Penei Sewell. He's physical. He's durable. He's versatile. He can play guard for you immediately. He can be the long-term solution at center. I just think it makes so much sense. But it's going to take a trade up to get him. I think he's not going to last past 25, 26. If a guy like that, and they have, you know, they have, the roster is pretty complete, but there's a lot of spots where they could use the help. And I could definitely see if there's value on their board, them making the trade up, which is exactly what they did for Jameson Williams a couple of years ago, right? I mean, he was a number one receiver on their board when he fell to 12. They're like, yeah, the value's too good to pass up at this point, and they made the deal. Whether they actually pick a 29 remains to be seen. I have my doubts.
Yeah, I know. It's, as you know, we've both done two mock drafts. It's like you get these draft crushes and then you get to pick 29 for the Lions and you're like, oh man, all the players I like are gone. Like, so, you know, if you fall in love with somebody, Jackson Powers for you, Johnny Newton's that guy for me. Like, if they're in love with one of those guys, they got to go up the board. And I would just say, I mean, Brad Holmes has proven to be able to do that. Like you said, I mean, for the moves last year to kind of get what they got and Gibbs, Laporta, Campbell, and all those, and even Hooker and Branch. I mean, they're going to move in some way or another. I mean, at least one point this week, and there's no doubt about it. So yeah, it's weird. You fall in love with these guys and you're just trying to figure out ways that they're going to last until the end of round one. And that's a whole new world, baby.
We got a mailbag on tap today. Again, it's a kind of a quiet world right now, in the, in the NFL. But some good questions on free agency and the draft. And I was originally going to dive into free agency first, but since we're talking about the draft, and that's kind of where the interest is anyway, let's open the mailbag with some draft questions and we'll get into some reactions, Ben, on free agency. Christian Anderson of Angier, North Carolina asks, I think we all understand at this point that Brett Holmes will draft the best player regardless of positional value. That said, what position do you think would represent the best value at pick 29? Corner, receiver, offensive line, defensive line, or maybe, you know, something else. Ben, what comes to your mind of what might be the best value for Detroit at 29?
You know, I think it'll be offensive line or wide receiver, like the best value, the best player left on the board, I think, you know, that sexy name, because I really do love this year's offensive line class. And I know they've filled out that starting lineup. They've done a good job on that, but like, there's still some long-term holes down the line there on that offensive line. There's still the question of Frank Ragnow's just, I mean, hey, Frank's one of the best players on the face of the earth and one of the best at what he does, but like, he's also a human. I know he's proven not to be human, but like, I just think you do need to like really look hard at those offensive line prospects, whether it's a tackle that you think can kick inside for a couple of years, whether it's a center you think can play guard for a couple of years and maybe a center down the line. I really do think offensive line is potentially going to be the best value pick at pick 29. I really do believe that. And receivers just 1B for me, just because these last like 5 years of receiver classes is like, holy crap, there's like 12 guys you can fall in love with. So I really do think there is value at receiver and around one, you get into round two or something like that. And like you said, who knows, maybe Brad Holmes grabs himself another running back and just stumps us one more time and then walks all over us and spits on us on the way out next year. So we'll see, but that's my take.
Oh man. Can you imagine? Can you imagine after everything last year about, you know, taking Jahmyr Gibbs where they did, he caught so much flack for it. And Gibbs is like an NFL all rookie, you know, had like one of the five best seasons ever by first year offensive player. In Detroit, in terms of total yardage, I mean, all that stuff. And then he goes out there after the season, you know, does a victory dance and then comes out to round one, takes another running back. Oh my gosh. I tend to agree with you. I like going into the process, I thought maybe corner was going to be the best value at 29. I think the field has thinned a little bit for Detroit. You know, I really liked Ennis Rakestraw as a possibility, the corner from Missouri. He's a physical guy, good tackler, brings a lot of the culture stuff, the intangibles that Detroit looks for. But he's got some injury history. He's dealing with another injury in this pre-draft process. Has not, you know, performed well in the pre-draft process. Had a pretty bad combine. I don't think he's a round one guy personally anymore. I do think he's a fit for Detroit, and if he's there in round two, for example, it could happen. But I just don't think he's in the mix at 29. I also don't think Nate Wiggins, another first round guy, is really a strong candidate for Detroit. I just don't think he's physical enough, big enough. You know, I forget what he weighed at the combine, but it was like $150 or something. You know, I just don't see that as a fit for what they're looking for. They also, you know, they went out and traded for Carlton Davis and signed Amik Robertson. And I think they have some immediate needs met there, despite what's happened with Cam Sutton and his subsequent release. I do think corner is a need and something that we'll see addressed early in the draft. I just don't think it's like the slam dunk round one, you know, need meshing with availability kind of situation that we thought at the outset of this process. I do think offensive line, I agree with you. I think offensive line is probably where the value will be. Again, you never know how the draft will play out. Maybe some of these guys will be off the board and the value will emerge maybe on the defensive interior or maybe at receiver or some of these other places. But I know there's a handful of guys I think that I would really like for Detroit early in this draft. And like I said, Jackson Powers Johnson, if he's there, I mean, I'm running that pickup there. I just think he would solidify in so many different ways your biggest strength, and feeding the beast, if you will, is you know, it's a huge thing in the NFL. We pay so much attention to, oh, like the corner situation was terrible last year, so go get a corner. I mean, you got to stay strong where you're strongest, dude. You got to build mismatches in this league, and the Lions' biggest mismatches in the offensive line, the physicality they play with there, the protection they provide Jared Goff. Obviously what they do in the running game, one of the most diverse run games in the league, being able to continue to feed that beast is critical. And, you know, Kevin Zeitler is a great temporary piece, but he's on a one-year contract. We all like Graham Glasgow. He's getting up there a little bit in age. I think he's like 32 maybe now. I don't know. He's going to be an old guy. Just building the depth on the interior. And then you have, obviously, Frank Ragnow's toe situation. Just having plan Bs in place, I think, is critical. And I think you're going to see a good marriage of what they need with the type of guys that will be available at 29.
Yeah. And I mean, there are a couple wild cards, the cornerback and the edge debate, like Kool-Aid McKinstry. I think we were all scared off when that Jones fracture came off. But like the Alabama program, Brad Holmes has been pretty keen to being tuned in on. And if they feel comfortable with him, I mean, that's where I could change my tune. If like a Kool-Aid or a Chop Robinson is still there at 29. But yeah, I have a hard time not seeing offensive line being the top value at pick 29, at least where we're sitting right now.
It's interesting. You know, it's April 9 as we record this. I've only seen personally one pre-draft visit so far for Detroit. And obviously there's still time, but I was off the clock for a few days there, catching some rays down south. And so maybe I missed something, but to my knowledge, it's just Kool-Aid McKinstry, who you just mentioned. And I thought that was an interesting name to come through, because I mocked him to Detroit in my first mock draft. And I think he's a good fit. I think there are better fits probably, but he's like a really solid round one, high IQ kind of player. Maybe doesn't have the high end physical traits of a guy like Terry Arnold, who's my favorite corner in this draft, who also played for Alabama. But Kool-Aid McKinstry would be like a very interesting fit, I feel like, for Detroit.
Yeah, the only other top 30 visit that happened while you were off was a Pritchett cornerback from Auburn, who's like a second, third, fourth round prospect. So yeah, it's been a little quiet developing. We might have a bunch of those posts to do in the coming weeks.
Chris Matthews asks, is a first round corner a real possibility? I only see Terry Arnold, Cooper DeJean, and Quinyon Mitchell's a good fit, and they are likely to be gone by 29. Ben, we kind of just addressed this, but there's a lot of interest out there in this cornerback class. That happens when you're a bottom five pass defense several years in a row, and then you dismiss your top corner from last year, as the Lions have in Cam Sutton. Thankfully, they've signed Amik Robertson. They've re-signed Emmanuel Mosley. They still have Brian Branch. And of course, they traded for Carlton Davis. And so I think they have some options to play with, but needs still exist. And they'll want depth. They'll want someone to compete with Amik Robertson, obviously, on the outside. That was the original plan, right? They didn't bring in Robertson to, okay, you're going to be CB2. He was supposed to be a depth guy. And now that Cam Sutton is out of the picture, he's kind of penciled into the starting lineup. I still think they need some, you know, high-end guy to compete for that position. So I guess, how do you view the cornerback thing in the first round after everything that's played out for the last few weeks?
Yeah, I touched on Kool-Aid McKinstry. I could 100% see that happen. And the other name that's kind of like solidified himself as a first round corner to me over Wiggins and over a couple of those guys is Michigan's Mike Sanstrill. You know, I think coming into this process, I only really looked at him as a slot option. The more you dig into his game, the more you read about him, the more you see about him, it's like, oh, this is not someone without a home. This is just someone who's pretty good at freaking everything and can go where you need him to do. So I think really Mike Sanstrill, especially if the Lions are serious about playing Brian Branch more at safety, he could make a ton of sense in the first round. So I do think a first round corner is still a possibility, because I mean, Davis still needs a new deal. It's a 1 year deal. Robertson, it's a 1 year deal. Emmanuel Mosley, it's a 1 year deal off a couple ACLs. And I mean, they might feel good about that in the short term, but like if one of those guys gets hurt next season, you know, it's still at the top of the list and needs. So I think it is a possibility. I think it's a tougher value to swing at the end of the first round, because those elite top of the line going to start year one, compete for starting year one cornerbacks usually are off the board, the top 20 picks. So like, that is something to watch. But like Mike Sanstrill and even Kool-Aid McKinstry have kind of topped Nate Wiggins for me, because it's just like, I just can't picture a 173-pound, 20-year-old cornerback playing for this team.
No, I'm with you on Wiggins. He's not a fit for me unless he has a serious fall. But I don't know, man. The Mike Sanstrill thing, you're kind of throwing me a little bit, because I had him in that box still in my brain as kind of a slot guy. And maybe there's versatility in his game. I mean, not maybe, there is versatility in his game, but that is what Brian Branch is. And I wonder if there's too much overlap between those two guys for Sandstrom to be a true round one fit in Detroit. And that's why they took Brian Branch last year, right? Like, they didn't go into that draft planning to take Brian Branch. It got to round two. It was like pick 45 or whatever it was. And they couldn't believe he was still on the board. They had a round one grade on the guy. It's like, well, we just signed CJ Gardner-Johnson, but this guy's awesome. We have him high on our board. He's available. Let's go get him and figure it out later. And that's what they did. So if Sandstrom is still available, like, let's say round two, round three, like there's some kind of dramatic fall with that guy, then maybe they go out and get him. He makes your team better. But I don't know if he's a round one priority for me, because maybe there's too much overlap in what their games can do. Like, as slot guys who have versatility to play elsewhere, I don't like what they need to me is high end playmakers on the outside. And is that Mike Sandstrom? Like maybe he can do some of those things, but I don't know if that's like, you know, the guy you go out and prioritize in round one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh no, I hear you. I just, when I watch Mike Sandstrom play, he plays like a fit here. He's a former wide receiver. He's insanely aggressive at the catch point. I do think he's an easy to love player in this scheme. That's the only, I love Mike Sandstrom as a prospect. He's going to make a team really happy. It wasn't until these last couple of weeks that I kind of started looking at him as a potential fit here. And that was before the Branch to safety kind of talk came up at the owners meetings. But I was just kind of like, in terms of ball hawks, in terms of the way this guy plays, in terms of talent level and program, He's made himself hard to ignore from where I'm sitting, for sure. You know, he's a ball hawking freak, man. I think I could see them, or even like a team like the Ravens at that kind of down in that range, falling in love with him, even in round one. I really do think that.
The draft is coming to Detroit, obviously, as we all well know. Brandon Thornton asks an excellent question I want to put to you, Ben.
Yeah.
Planning for the draft, what are your top three breakfast places in downtown Detroit? Ben? No pressure. No pressure.
Man, I love this question. Love this question. No, the dime store. I love the dime store. The duck confit hash is my go-to order there. Number two for downtown Detroit, old school Detroit hangout where the mayors used to hang, the cops used to hang. Click Diner. Click Diner is fantastic for an old school diner breakfast. And the little classy upscale local diner, the Brooklyn Street Local. They do a great job with drinks and coffees. You know, it's just kind of like a higher upscale diner. So yeah, I'll go Click Diner, which is over by the riverfront, dime store right downtown, gonna be in the heart of the NFL draft stuff, and then Brooklyn Street Local is just a little outside of that sphere.
Well done on the Click. I've had some. Yeah. I've had some. Let's say late nights end there. It's a quick classic.
Absolutely,
dude. The scene there in the odd hours is very Detroit. So I had written Dime Store and Hudson Cafe as like, okay, so if you've never been to Detroit or never really eaten in Detroit, those are the classic breakfast places that people talk about. Maybe look into them, maybe go there. They're not in my top three. They're a little like, I don't know. They're just all over. I've done them a million times. I'm especially fond of Honest John's. I live in Woodbridge, so I can bike to Honest John's in like no time. It's a great place for breakfast, for brunch, especially if you've had a late night, let's say at the NFL draft, maybe you're feeling it in the morning. I think Honest John's is a great vibe for that. Over in Eastern Market, Vivio's, they have the best Bloody Marys in the city. I'll put my name on that.
Agreed.
Yeah, they're phenomenal. They have one there. I forget what it's called, but it's like 18, 20 bucks, but it's like the works. You got everything in that thing that you could ever want in a Bloody Mary. It's spicy. It's like a meal and a drink. It's fantastic. And then my third was actually Brooklyn Street Local. So well done on that one, Ben. I feel that one. Yeah. They have some great vegetarian options, which I eat a lot of vegetarian these days. Their poutine is fantastic if you're into poutine. And as a runner up, I put Antojitos in the Southwest where you're moving. Platanos, queso fresco, pupusas, tamales, all that kind of good stuff, which really hits the spot sometimes.
Yeah. Honest John's, great call. Can't believe I left them. As a former liver in Woodbridge, man, I feel like I'm going to go in there and they're going to shame me if they listen to this. I used to go in there so much, great list. Hudson Cafe. I don't think I've done that since I was on the Michigan's Best Beat like 7 years ago.
Let's turn the focus to a free agency a little bit. There's some questions that popped up in that area. I don't think we've had a podcast since free agency opened, or maybe there was just, I think maybe we did one. So there's some good, like, second wave of free agency type of questions, including at receiver. Kim Mann asks, as opposed to many who comment on Lions transactions, I was a bit disappointed that we weren't able to keep Josh Reynolds. Is it too much to expect of a rookie to take over that role, or will Donovan Peoples-Jones be able to fill that gap? Josh Reynolds signed a deal with, now I'm forgetting it. Where did he sign?
Oh, the Broncos. Broncos.
Yeah, Broncos. Right? Yep. Yeah. Yep. Couple years, year deal. It was originally reported at $14 million by the national guys. I've been my eternal frustration with those guys continue because they get, here's what happens. A guy like, let's just say the name, Adam Schefter, gets a text from an agent saying 2 years, $14 million. And they just tweet it out as if, like, without even fact checking, they don't really care about the details or the reality of the deal. It's just the agent wants to sound as good as possible. Guys like Adam Schefter want to get the information, so they don't really question that information, even if it's not true. And Josh Reynolds ended up getting like a 2 year, was it 10, $11 million deal? And then the rest are incentives, which seems very like, those are good numbers for Josh Reynolds, a guy like Josh Reynolds. He's a productive wide receiver two, wide receiver three. The original numbers were like, dang, he got paid, but now reality has set in. And he got a good deal in Denver, but I can understand why Detroit wasn't going to match those numbers. I guess, how do you see the receiver situation playing out now in Detroit?
Well, it went from a sneaky need to a need to me, because like, while Donovan Peoples-Jones is sexy on paper, he's done it before. It's been a couple of years, and like, even when he was here for a couple extended weeks, knew the offense, knew his surroundings, there just wasn't production. Maybe that was his place on the depth chart, but I mean, I have a hard time seeing Peoples-Jones as someone to fill that gap. I think he's an excellent depth piece to have on your main roster. Just size, speed. I mean, he made two of his five catches last year were big time catches on like a 3rd and 20 and a 4th and 13. And I mean, he has produced in this league before. He's from this city. He's, you know, he just has, but it's hard to count on him because there was a reason Josh Reynolds was ahead of him. There was a reason why Brad Holmes told all you guys at the owners meetings that, dang, we want him back. That's one of our top priorities this offseason. So it's hard to expect a rookie to fill those needs unless you're taking one in the first round, and then they better fill those Josh Reynolds needs because, hey, Josh Reynolds, great pro, not a superstar, a glue piece, dependable glue piece who kind of banked on that familiarity with Goff and the offense on being a really red zone threat for the Lions. So it's a need. I mean, it really is a need. I would still put some more defensive help in the offensive line in front of receiver just based on what they've got with Laporta, St. Brown, and hopefully more from JMO this year, but they need to add something, and they need to add a specifically outside cut from the Peoples-Jones Reynolds mold. So it's a lot to expect someone to take over that role, but like, if you're spending a first or second round pick on it with a Peoples-Jones as that stopgap, I would feel pretty good about that.
I mean, I think the Lions thinking is JMO, right? I mean, Josh Reynolds was your second option, your top option on the outside beyond what Amon-Ra was doing in the slot. They hope JMO's that guy next year. And I continue to have, I'm mixed on it. You know, I don't know if I would bank on it. Like, I agree with you. I think there's a need there. Even with JMO and Donovan Peoples-Jones, you have options, but like, that's still a need. You want someone that you feel comfortable with to be added to that position. I don't think you have enough depth there to go into next season, but they are banking on JMO kind of continuing the late season surge that he had last year. He showed some real competency, I would say, consistency in his route running. I think the evidence that you can see for that is how much his usage went up down the stretch, including in the fourth quarter, and not just his snap count, but his target share too. Like, all that stuff was going up. Jared Goff was clearly trusting him more. Jared said the same things too, that he was, you know, counting on JMO, that he was just one of the guys out there. I mean, it might seem like a low bar to clear, but JMO had some issues with route running and knowing the playbook, being able to have a diverse route tree early on. He worked through those issues, and I think that they're really expecting him to continue the things that you saw down the stretch last year to continue to see that development into 2024, and that he can develop into a guy who can be the number, you know, the top option on the outside and complementing what you already have in St. Brown and Laporta, who are going to be your top two pass catchers. But both of what they do is in the, you know, middle of the field. But Jameis had ups and downs. I just feel like they need to build around what they already have, with the guys they have on the roster.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, yeah, this offense is, like we've talked about a million times, knowing Jared Goff, knowing where you're going to be and when you're going to be there is essential to this offense's success. And Jameis might never be that type of receiver, which is why I have a hard time seeing him as, like, labeling him as wide receiver two in this offense. And I maybe that's 2 years from now. I'm not trying to down on the guy. He was great to end last season. It was very optimism inducing. Like, I really do think he's going to be better and more involved next year, start to finish, injuries permitting and off-field stuff permitting, whatever you want to do permitting. But yeah, I just think you need, I'd love to see him add a dependable vet. I know that's hard this time of year, but, like, gosh, it's just, Josh Reynolds was just such a nice fit for that offense, because that way you kind of got like a 2A and 2B with a Williams and Reynolds able to do the things opposite St. Brown and Laporta. So yeah, it's a need. Maybe it's a short-term need, maybe it's a long-term need, but yeah, it's hard to count on Jameson to fill that type of stuff because he's such a different player. This is a playmaker. This is a home run hitter. It's like an electric closer coming into the eighth and ninth inning. Like, I think he is like a true take the top off specialty player.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots to like about Jameis's game. He does things that are special. The clip from the championship game against the 49ers, you know, where he takes the pitch on a reverse or end around or whatever it was. Races through it's like the first couple minutes of the game. He's racing in the end zone, like through tackles and whatnot. And it's like, damn, that guy's special. Like, the traits he has are special, yeah. And there's always going to be a place for that. But what Josh Reynolds provided you, and I know he had a bad last game there, I came to forget a couple of big drops, right. But he was so reliable when you needed a catch on third and 10. Like, he was a very dependable player. Josh Reynolds was, and that, for everything J-Mo does exceedingly well, that to this point has not been his game. You know, third and 10, let's go after J-Mo. Like, you can give him the ball on a reverse and he's going to give you a 40-yard touchdown, but I don't know that we've seen from him yet that he can be that bankable guy in a got-to-have-a situation. And that's what you need in a wide receiver, too. If you're going to double Amon-Ra St. Brown, where's the ball going? And they need that guy. And, you know, maybe J-Mo gets there. I just haven't seen that particular thing in his game yet.
No, I agree. Nope, I fully agree.
Brandon Thornton asks, which current player on the roster do you feel is primed for a breakout season? I thought that was an interesting question. I put some thought into it. I'm curious first, though, Ben, to hear where you went with it.
Yeah, I'm going with linebacker Jack Campbell. I really think when he was put in his natural position, after you got past that week 9 and 10 mark of the season, you started to kind of see the vision with him. And I still think Derek Barnes deserves a part in this defense, next to Alex Anzalone. But I think you can expect Jack Campbell to be the number two starter next season at some point, whether that's right away or not right away, it remains to be seen. But, like, I just really liked what I saw about him. They tried to get him on the field and that kind of like pass rushing role, edge role, just didn't work. He just wasn't a fit there. They just were banking on his natural size and athleticism to carry him through. But I think full off season, linebacker with those guys, he's such a sneaky, I hate to say that about him, but he is a sneaky athlete, because when he hits that second gear, you're like, oh my god, yeah, this is an athlete right here. He's a perfect fit for this defense, he's a perfect fit for this coaching staff and scheme. And I really do think it's safe to expect more from the first round pick last year, because I think he ended the year not on an ultra high note, but on an improving note. He's heading in the right direction, and I think that he is that linebacker position. It's changed so much in the NFL. I really do think experience, reps, familiarity, especially with a guy like Alex Anzalone and Derek Barnes in that room, those are two great guys for him to bounce off of. Reeves Maben too. Like, I got Jack Campbell circled as my breakout player.
So I wrote down two guys, the number one guy, and I went up and down the roster, offense and defense. I gave this question some thought because I just thought it was interesting. I hadn't considered it before. Jack Campbell was number one for me, so I'm with you. Number two was iffy. Fetu Malafonwu. Man, Ben, I really enjoyed watching him play football down the stretch last year. I enjoyed his story. Like, third round pick in 2021, the first return from the Matthew Stafford trade. He walks into Allen Park and you're like, oh my God, right? Like he
no
is,
doubt. Just, no doubt.
The man is cut. Like he is so big and so long and so fit. I mean, he looks the part of an NFL defensive back, safety, corner, whatever. I mean, he's just a monster. And he got thrown out there early in his career. I think it was game two because of some injuries and whatnot to Jeff Okuda. What do you know? And played pretty well, I would say, against Aaron Rodgers and then blows out his quad, I believe. And it's just been a never-ending run of injuries since. And when you factor in a position change from corner to safety, navigating injuries throughout his career, he just never saw the field. You kind of forgot about him. And last year when CJ Gardner-Johnson went down, of course, Tracy Walker went out there to play with Kirby Joseph because, you know, we all know Tracy and what he can do and team captain. I mean, you just never really gave Iffy any thought. And I remember being in Chicago and I'm like, man, is that Iffy starting? Like, what is going on here? You know? And he played a really good game. And it was all downhill from there. I mean, he played fantastic football. And it was just so unexpected from a guy you kind of forgot about because of the injuries and the position change and bigger names ahead of him. Look all the money they spent on CJ Gardner-Johnson and so on. Like, clearly, if he was not really a part of the plan, the thing is that he was so damn good in practice and particularly on the blitz. Like, he was winning like 90% of his one-on-ones. He was tearing apart the offense on the blitz. He was doing it basically with his physical skill set. The technique came along as they started to do it more and more. If he told me during the playoff run, Ben, that he had not run, like he wasn't used on the blitz at any point in his career, including college. Like, he blitzed one time in college. And yes, he got the sack. and they never really used him in that role in Detroit. And they were just kind of tinkering with him in practice. And he just was a natural at it. And you saw what happened down the stretch. He was a terror on the blitz. That's where he was best. Had a couple of interceptions too, including in Minnesota to clinch the division. I mean, I just really enjoyed watching him last year, Ben. He showed tremendous growth. He kind of delivered on some of the physical potential we saw early in his career. And as long as he can stay healthy, I think there's a reason why they didn't really make a push to re-sign Gardner-Johnson. I think they're really counting on Iffy to become a full-time starter next year alongside Kirby Joseph. I think Brian Branch is going to factor into that lineup a little bit too. But I think Iffy is really primed for a breakout year.
Yeah, and I mean, when the Lions were struggling to get pass rush pressure from anyone other than Hutchinson, I mean, what unlocked that defense and what helped that defense get better in the meaty months of December and January was Branch and Melifonwu blitzing. I mean, the way they orchestrated pressure with those two guys, man, it's you might see a couple new wrinkles to that defense out of the gates next year, especially because Melifonwu was like, he's got a chance to be a breakout guy. He's got a chance to be one of the most important players on that team this year, because if he can hold down that spot, jeez, I mean, that's how this defense gets better. So you can put those resources elsewhere if you got someone you can bank on. Yeah, it's hard to do based on his wild path to this point filled with injuries, but like, man, that is a legit. I mean, Branch and Melifonwu has the potential to be two of the best blitzing defensive backs in the NFL if they continue where they left off.
It really is intriguing to think about because they're both so versatile. They can line up. I mean, if it could line up in the slot,
yep.
Like, why not? Especially on a bigger guy like a tight end or whatever. Obviously, Branch can do that too. They're both great tacklers. They're both tremendous on the blitz. You got some options, bro. Like Aaron Glenn is going to have a lot of options. He would have had more with Cam Sutton in the fold too, but there's still going to be so many different lineups you can throw out there. And they have the physicality that Aaron Glenn wants. And I one thing Glenn always talks about with Iffy too is that he loves safeties who have corner experience. Because a guy like Iffy, he has the physical profile to play safety. 6'3", he's long, great tackler, physical. Obviously, we saw it time and time again. But he also has coverage skills too of a former cornerback. And so, yeah, man, they have just so many options to play guys all over the field next year and to send that pressure after the quarterback, which is like you said, Ben, I think you said it perfectly. It really like forced some pressure last year when the defensive line wasn't getting it done. Aiden Hutchinson was phenomenal. Everyone else was suspect on the edge last year. And I think that they like the possibilities next year with Marcus Davenport in the fold. You got James Houston coming back from injury. Aiden obviously back, but then you have this pressure you're able to generate from the outside as well. I just think that they like their options, and Iffy is a big reason for that, and for that reason, like I said, I just what we saw last year, I think, is a microcosm of what he could deliver in a full season.
Yeah, a couple game-winning picks along the way down the stretch, too. I mean, just speaking to your point, I mean, I remember the first year with Aaron Glenn. What are you looking for in a slot? What are you looking for in a safety? And he used to basically just describe C.J. Gardner-Johnson, but he's basically describing the current version of Ifeatu Melifonwu, and it's just like, man, they know how to get those fits, man. That's the one thing they do well.
Good stuff, man. That's what we got. I think we got a
full. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, nice. Obviously, the draft process is ramping up, so we'll be back next week with some meatier stuff on what to expect heading into the later parts of this month. It's going to be a busy couple weeks, Ben, so I hope you can enjoy some sunshine while you can.
Yeah, got to do my homework first.
Ben's in grad school, for those who haven't heard.
Yeah, added a second job title. Thank you. Thank you. I'm crazy.